A Haynes recall attempt highlights a gray area in state open meetings rules. And a proposed ferry and tourist shuttle is up for Haynes Assembly approval. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Abby Collins. Those stories and more, up next. An attempt to recall half of the members on the Haynesboro Assembly is underway. It's still uncertain whether the effort will go to a public vote, but one of the misconduct allegations brings up a gray area in Alaska law about whether private conversations between assembly members can violate open meetings rules. KHNS's Emily Files has more.
Don Turner Jr. is the main sponsor on the three recall applications filed last week. Turner did not want to be recorded for this story, but he provided KHNS copies of the emails he references in his case against assembly members Tresham Gregg, Tom Morfitt, and Heather Lendy. One is an email Gregg sent to Lendy on December 12, 2016. It was the day before the assembly would vote on whether to approve a piece of the harbor project they had previously rejected, a 33-foot extension on the new wave barrier. In the email, Gregg says to Lendy, quote, "I hope we don't have to tussle over the 33-foot extension of the wall. Tom and Ron and I are against it. Need you there too." Gregg was referring to fellow assembly members Tom Morfitt and Ron Jackson. Turner says he got the email from former manager Bill Seward, who put in a public records request for certain assembly communications after he was fired. Lendy replied to Gregg, but her response was redacted by the borough attorney. Turner thinks Gregg talking to three other assembly members about the issue, even if they were separate conversations, amounts to a violation of the Alaska Open Meetings Act.
We have recommended that you not do serial polling at all.
That's Alaska Municipal League Director Kathy Wasserman. Wasserman says AML advises newly elected officials against what's called serial polling or serial meetings. An AML handbook for elected officials says, while this is not explicitly forbidden in the Open Meetings Act, courts have concluded that a series of individual conversations, quote, may amount to an illegal meeting.
To have one person start to contact another and then it works its way through an assembly or a council is against the Open Meetings Act, because basically decisions are being made not in the meeting. And the discussion around that issue, more importantly, is not being held in public.
John McKay, a lawyer who specializes in the Open Meetings Act, says serial meetings are a gray area. He says the Open Meetings Act is meant to provide access to all phases of the deliberative process government bodies go through. Turner says Gregg's email to Lendy is evidence the two of them and Morfitt violated the Open Meetings Act. But the three assembly members disagree. Gregg says the private conversations did not preclude a public debate, which the assembly did have at its meeting.
I don't think that there's anything that we did anything particularly wrong.
Gregg also pointed out that the 33-foot breakwater extension was approved. He was the only vote against it. Lendy said assembly members checking in with each other is not depriving the public of its right to witness the deliberation process.
I think that this assembly has been more than any other one in recent memory really good about deliberating public. And I think that that 33-foot wall had lots of discussion in public. And I think that minds were changed back and forth from even what people thought on the street to what happened in the meeting.
Morfitt also defended the assembly members' right to have private conversations about borough business.
It is my understanding of the Open Meetings Act that any individual member can poll each of the other members. What we can't do is make decisions outside public meetings. We can't say, what are we going to do?
Morfitt says it looks like Gregg polled fellow assembly members and then reported to Lendy what he found. Morfitt says they did not get together to plan their decision.
I don't believe that that is a violation of the words of the Open Meetings Act. I think it might be arguable that that violated the spirit of the act, but even that, I think, would be tenuous.
Turner's violation of the Open Meetings Act allegation is just one of the claims in the recall applications. In the next couple weeks, the borough clerk and attorney will decide whether the claims warrant official recall petitions. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
There may be a shuttle offering rides to and from the Haines Ferry Terminal this summer. Jonathan Richardson has applied for a commercial tour permit that includes rides to popular trailheads and the ferry terminal. Most of Richardson's business would come from dropping off and picking up tourists at Battery Point, Mount Rapinski, and the Chilkat River beaches. But he says he also plans to make room in his shuttle schedule for ferry trips. Richardson also plans to use a second van for guided tour hikes in Chilkat State Park. The tour permit is up for assembly approval this week. Tourism Director Leslie Ross writes in a letter to the Assembly that there is a need for this type of shuttle, but she says more information is needed, including a safety plan for the guided hikes and how Richardson will navigate private property around the Chilkat River beaches. The Assembly is also set to approve a $55,000 settlement with former manager Bill Seward at Tuesday's meeting. The borough settled with Seward after he demanded severance pay and claimed the Assembly defamed and discriminated against him. The budgeting process for fiscal year 2018 has begun. The Assembly may introduce the manager's proposed budget at Tuesday's meeting. It includes the addition of a new police officer, a large contribution to a newly formed economic development corporation, and a slight townsite mill rate increase. The budget will go through at least two public hearings before adoption. The Assembly will also decide whether to confirm the Planning Commission and Port and Harbor Committee's LUTAC DOC recommendation. Those two groups chose a $37 million encapsulation as their preferred option to shore up the aging dock. If the Assembly affirms the recommendation, the borough can use the design as it seeks grant funding. Borough officials have said that if they can't raise enough money for the preferred design, they may have to fall back on a cheaper option that replaces the dock with birthing dolphins. Also on the agenda is a discussion about the Assembly's role in performance evaluations for the borough clerk and chief fiscal officer. The meeting is set for Tuesday at 6:30 in Assembly Chambers. Wrangell may have a new borough manager as soon as next week. The Wrangell Borough Assembly selected its choice during an executive session Thursday and has begun to negotiate a contract. Both candidates, Jean Green of Silverton, Oregon, and Lisa Von Bargen of Valdez, interviewed for the position Wednesday and met with the community during a meet-and-greet that evening. Green applied for the Haines manager position as well. The Assembly selected him as a semi-finalist, but he withdrew his name from consideration. Both candidates have experience in Alaska. Green served as assistant city manager in Unalaska beginning in 1995 and worked for Anchorage's water and wastewater utility prior to taking the job. Bargen has worked for the city of Valdez as the economic development director for the past 16 years. The Assembly may award a contract during an executive session on April 11th. Borough Clerk Kim Lane says there also may be an announcement after the session. The Assembly has been searching for someone to fill the seat since last fall. At the end of last week's Ketchikan City Council meeting, a council member warned of possible repercussions from a state budget cut to Alaska's Pioneer Homes. Council member Bob Sievertson is a member of the State Pioneer Homes Advisory Board and works with the Ketchikan Pioneers Home Foundation. He says the Senate Finance Committee cut about $6.5 million of state funding for those long-term care residential homes for seniors.
$51 million operations to $44 million. And unfortunately, even closing one facility won't cover that deficit.
Sievertson says the six Pioneer Homes in Alaska already are holding beds vacant because previous cuts led to staffing shortages. He says if the Senate cut remains and the Ketchikan home is closed for closure, it would have a big impact on the community and individual families.
Ketchikan employs 70 people, and it has about 45 residents. There's nothing in this community that's available to take those displaced residents if they decide to close the facility, and I don't know how they would do that.
In their budgets, the governor and the House called for funding of about $51 million for Pioneer Homes. If the Senate Finance Committee's proposed cut survives and makes it into the Senate's approved budget, the issue will move into a conference committee between the House and the Senate. For KHNS News, I'm Abby Collins. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.